Welcome to the Matt Haycock Show, a podcast about business, money, and life. Matt has been making money and making mistakes for over 20 years. And in this podcast, he shares his thoughts and stories so you can improve your business, finances, and life, whilst hopefully avoiding the mistakes he and others have made along the way. Listen in and level up.
Hey guys, it's Matt Haycox here, and if you've been watching any of these interviews lately, you're about to see me do my third interview with a tennis player. I've got Wayne Ferreira with me today, who's a former South African tennis player. He had 15 men's singles titles, 11 men's double titles, and he peaked at number 6 in the world. Retired in 2004, and since then has gone into a career in business and also coaching other players. So we've got loads of lessons that we're going to be able to learn from him today. Wayne, thanks a lot for being with us.
Yeah, great. Thanks, man.
Obviously, I gave a little bit of an introduction to you there, but can you flesh it out for me? Can you take us back to the beginning, and how did it all begin for you?
Yeah, I mean, I started playing tennis when I was about 6 or 7 years old, along with cricket and soccer, badminton, a lot of different sports. I really enjoyed the competition part of it. And when I was about 13, I decided to make that step where you have to kind of start picking one or the other. Decided to take tennis because I enjoyed more of the individual aspect of it. Sort of just, you know, when you play a soccer match and a game and you lose and you play out of your mind and you lose, it kind of was really disappointing for me. So I chose tennis, which in the end ended up being a good choice. Played through the junior ranks. I was actually ended up number 1 in the world in doubles, number 5 in the junior ranks, and then went into the seniors. So yeah, and I had a successful career.
What age did you turn pro?
I actually left school when I was 16, went into the Air Force for 2 years, from 16 to 18, so literally turned pro when I was 16.
What did you do in the Air Force?
Just had to do it. It was mandatory at the time, it's not anymore, but it used to be back in the time. So I decided with a bunch of other guys to go in at the same time, and you know, we managed to play quite a lot of tennis while we were there.
But did they have like Air Force tennis teams or something you could keep?
We had a tennis academy with guys in the military. I mean, there were some in the Army, some in the Air Force, some in the medics, and we all got together in the afternoons after work and practiced and had workouts and that, but basically did our 2 years at wherever we were.
Did you find that, let's say, the discipline and some of the things that was learnt in the Air Force ultimately assisted your tennis when you came back to it, or was it a distraction from being out of the game for 2 years?
Really, only the basic training, 6 weeks basic training, was really the hard part, where we had to put a lot of energy and focus into, you know, obviously the work that you do and everything. But after that, you know, I just worked in an office for a sergeant major and wasn't really much behind that at all. But you know, basic training was great. I learned a lot. You know, you got to fight through the adversities of struggling. So yeah, in the end, you know, when I look back at it was an amazing experience.
And when did the professional career start?
So about 89. You know, obviously turned pro when I was 16, but 89 went out. You know, first couple of years did really well. Won my first event actually in 92, so I've been on the tour a few years. I won Queens, which was...
The first event you won?
Yeah, which was an amazing win for my first one out. And then through 92, played until 2004, so, you know, it was from 89 to 2004.
And how did you know it was time to finish? What was what's happening?
I was lucky in some ways, but also maybe not. I mean, I was very healthy through my career, didn't have too many injuries in that, and played a lot. And I feel like maybe I played too much and didn't really schedule that well. Towards the end in 2004, I had my first child, was born in 99, and I spent the next 5 years on the tour, and being away from them was quite tough. And then my second child, when my wife got pregnant in early 2003, he was born in May 2004. I made a conscious decision to quit the game when he was born. I felt like it was the right time, and I actually played through the US Open through September, quitting after that. And I just felt, you know, started to feel some injuries, shoulder was hurting me a lot, lost a lot of interest, enjoyed my time with my child. Second one coming along, wanted to be more around him and spend more energy with him, so I quit mainly for that reason. But it was, in the end, a great decision for me. I have no regrets. I don't ever ever have one day where I feel like I should have played longer. So it was a perfect timing for me.
When your first child was born, were you married back then? Mm-hmm. Did your wife and child, you know, travel around at all with you? Or?
Well, my wife travelled with me most of the time when we met, and we were together for a long time. By that stage she was kind of tired of the travelling. So no, she didn't. We moved to California. We lived in Paris while I was playing with her, and then when he was born, we moved to California, close to her family. She's from California, and she stayed at home. So that was a difficulty. You know, the good thing about it is it gave me a perspective of life, that there were other things that were more important than just tennis. But it was tough sometimes, because when I play a tournament and things weren't going well, it was very easy for me to say, well, I can go home. So that made it also good and bad. But, you know, she didn't travel a lot, and I spent a lot of time away from him, which was tough.
So for yourself or for other people you've known out on the tour over the years, you know, how much of an impact do you see either the kind of the right or the wrong personal relationship you make on that? I mean, again, it's something I see in business all the time, where, you know, men or women who've got unstable, you know, relationships, mm-hmm. at home, you know, partners who don't understand the stress and all the background that goes on, you know, with running a business and growing a business, yeah. and you know, ultimately, for me, that makes the business person their job 100 times harder, and most of the time not achieve ultimately what they want to achieve. But you almost imagine in sport it's even more amplified and problematic. You know, you're about to walk on court for an important game, your missus has sent you a shitty text message. how does that affect you guys?
I was very fortunate. I picked a wonderful lady. She's been great. We're still married, and she's fantastic, you know, and she was overly supportive. She helped me so much in the extent of pushing me to do well. She made me sort of get the right coaches, look at the right things that would help me, and she was always great that way, and I never had any issues with her at all, and she made it really, really easy. But I kind of understand where you're talking about a little bit. You know, of 2007 I started a company that I wanted to do, and I brought in a business partner, and I made that mistake of bringing in the wrong person, and it was tough. And I could see what you're talking about. I had some friends who had bad relationships in the tennis, and I had a bad relationship with my business partner, and it makes life extremely difficult to be able to succeed and to achieve your goals of what it is that you set out to do if you have somebody like that. So it's detrimental.
What was the business you were involved in?
I started a water company. We built a machine that made water out of the humidity in the air. And we had a business in the US.
How did you come up with that idea?
I always liked the technology. I saw it many, many years ago. I wanted to do a project in South Africa, but decided rather just to build the company. We had our offices in the US. We had a factory in China. And just decided to start selling worldwide. We sold in about 20 different countries, and it grew really nicely. And conceptually, it's a wonderful idea, and I think something for the future that will be around a lot, because we're really lacking and losing out on water, and the atmosphere at this stage is really the only place that has water available for us, and nobody is really harnessing that that out of it. So I think you will see a lot more of it in the years to come. But it was a good experience. I learned a lot. It's completely different than playing tennis in many different ways. Tennis is a very selfish sport where you really think about yourself. You do whatever you want. But when you run a business and you have employees and you got to manage them, and you have to also in business rely on people that you're working with. And if they don't, when you play tennis, you go play a tennis match, you have a result. That each day you have a result at the end of the week, you move on to the next one. In business, I found it very difficult because things were always drawn out very long. You always had to wait for other people to give you answers and results, and it was frustrating because I didn't get that resolution as quickly as I would have liked to. So it was a good learning and turning it around and learning a lot about business.
And tell me, when you experienced, failures in business, and as I said, large scale failures, how would you compare those to losses in sport? And this is only something I've been considering literally over the last few weeks. I've been reading some articles about MMA fighters, actually. And I mean, I don't know how much you know about my background, but I guess my story to the to the business advice we give here and any coaching and stuff I do in general is from personal experience. experience, and you know, I started to build some very successful businesses very young, and then, you know, in the financial crash of 2008, I was naive, I was overgeared, I was, you know, let's say an aggressive young guy, went absolutely spectacularly bankrupt, and I guess, you know, I've been fortunate and also, you know, planned enough to rebuild. But when we talk about failures in business, that they're normally discussed on such a catastrophic scale. And I was reading recently about how a business coach was comparing the losses of an MMA fighter to bankruptcy or downfalls in business, and say, look, you know, if every time this fighter lost a fight, and say, well, that's it, I'm gonna, you know, I'm putting my shorts away, and I'm never coming back again. You know, how would Conor McGregor have ever been created, or these people? Mm-hmm. And it kind of started to open my eyes a bit to the comparables there. But would you say a major loss in business or a bankruptcy in business is akin to, you know, losing a Grand Slam final or something like that, or do you think they're still quite far removed? Does that make sense? That
question? Yeah, it makes a lot of sense, but I think it's difficult to really do that, because some sports are different than others. I mean, we play tennis every week. We have 4 Grand Slams a year, and you play for, you know, I played 56 Grand Slams in a row, so I had 56 opportunities. I think they come around fairly quick. You know, if you take maybe an Olympic swimmer or Olympic runner, where their focus is mainly just on the Olympics, and it's every 4 years, that might be a little bit closer related, because they spent 4 years
preparing,
working their ass to get to that level, to peak at that particular event. And business is the same. You know, you build it up, you want to get to a stage where you hit success at a certain level, and maybe you get to that level and you crash and burn. And then, you know, do I wait another 4 years? Do I put that energy in? Do I fight again? Do I do it, or do I just walk away? And tennis is not really like that, because, you know, you can lose a Grand Slam final in Australia. You have, you know, 6 months till the next one, and then you have a month to the next one, and then a couple months to the one after that. So,
and I guess even in between the Grand Slams, you've got your Masters or your other tournaments, which are not too far behind those anyway.
Yeah, business. You know, tennis is quite interesting too, because, you know, You can't be a perfectionist. You can't win every match, and if you expect to, you can't play the game, and you have to fight each day. I mean, you know, I always give kids the perfect example of, say, I play 20 tournaments in a year, played for 16 years, I won 15 events. So basically, I was just less than one time a year was I a winner. So every week that I left of those 20 weeks, I was a loser. And you know, you have to look at it as a success by being by winning more than losing percentages. And you know, it's a different perspective. You can't win. You get used to losing. You know, business can be like that too. You know, you work on a project. You spend a long time and a lot of energy getting it, and then finally in the end it fades away. And it's important for you to rebound, look for the next project, work on it again, and hope for that one success.
And I guess, you know, like tennis, you know, the parallels are, you know, yes, in those 20 weeks you've had those losses, but from, you know, from each of those losses, you know, you've learnt your lessons. You've improved your game. You've fixed strokes, and that is what is exactly the same with business.
Sure.
In that, you know, as long as you are learning from each of these failures and hope you are not repeating them again and you're applying them to something else, then, you know, they're not losses. You know, it's just kind of continual growth, you know, to the next Grand Slam.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you always have to learn from your losses. You have to learn and try to build, and then also when you have success, try to, you know, see what made that success. And yeah, I mean, you can relate to a certain degree with that, because I mean, everything that you do, it's a hard work that you put in, and you hope for success, but you never always guarantee it. But you know, like most people say, the harder you try and the more effort you put in, the better opportunity you have of succeeding.
I mean, just then you were saying, you know, you've got to learn from each of your failures, and this is something I was talking about with Bob Rochette last week, actually, in Manchester, saying that, you know, I always say that, you know, you only ever learn anything from your failures, never from your successes, because when you look back at a failure or a loss, it is easy to piece together what went wrong and change it to make sure it happened again, whereas when something goes right, it's just kind of, well, it went, you know, it went right. You know, yeah. I can't dissect it as easily. You know, would you say the same with the sport?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I definitely think. I mean, you know, learning the losses and learning from that is gains you the best experience. And I think that's, I think you're 100% key. It definitely is similar and the same.
So talk to me about coaching. You've recently started coaching Cilic.
Yeah.
Is that, have you coached before, or is this?
I've been in a different coaching role. I helped a young boy, Mackenzie McDonald, who's out on the tour. He's ranked about 70. I helped him from when he was 11 to 18,
okay.
Develop his game, and then the last 3 years I've been coaching my son, who's gone to college. This is my first sort of run at a professional player, and you know, it's been good. I like the fact that Marin is very open-minded to change. He's also, like what we talk about, looking to get better, and he's, you know, looking at things that haven't worked for him and try to build. And it's been good. You know, it's a little different when you're putting all of your energies into somebody else. But I think I learned a lot from business to be able to transcend into coaching, and it's been a lot of fun. I'm very excited to help him. I think he's got opportunities to get back to where he was, and that. So for me, there's that incentive to have him have success, to you know, feel that I was, you know, helping him out get there.
It's interesting that you say, you know, he wants to learn, he wants to get better. I mean, it was one of the things I really wanted to talk to you about with coaching was, you know, from a business perspective, you know, it's something I talk a lot about, and one of my pet hates is I think you know, particularly in the UK, we are we're very arrogant and closed-minded to a coaching and an improvement mentality in business. You know, not in sport, but, you know, in business. I think, okay, it's becoming a bit more fashionable now, if you like. And it's certainly prevalent in the US, but for me, people in UK business, there's no, they don't look at it as growth. It's I'm either in business or I'm out of business. You know, and whether you're a one man band who's just started a business yesterday, or you're 30 years deep with a, you know, with a 1,000 employee international corporation, you know, people, there's this kind of almost like arrogance, and it's like, you know, you can't admit that you need to learn anything in business, which obviously makes absolutely no sense when you compare that to sport, and you look at all the top sporting people who it's completely expected and commonplace that they're surrounded by coaches, you know, they're surrounded by teams of people to continually improve them. Mm-hmm. I mean, how, you know, but when you're at the top of the sporting game, do you still find people who are not open to being coached, or I'm world number one, number two, whatever, you know, mm-hmm. I don't need anything?
Yeah, unfortunately, I mean, those are the ones that always get to a level and never improve. I mean, we have to mention any names in that, but over the years I've seen many of them that have had coaches who have really been, you know, hitting their head against the wall because they know that they can help them, but every time they talk to them, the player thinks that they know best. And it's I don't think you can be successful that way. I think you have to be open-minded, you have to want to learn, you have to listen to other people, you have to take it. Now, you can always do it two ways too. I mean, I think it's important for you to listen to the person that's telling whatever they're telling to you, and then you assess it yourself and feel that if it makes any value or not. But you have to be open-minded to learn.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's super important. You've got to have the, let's say, the self-awareness and the depth of understanding to take it away. But I think, you know, yeah, if you're open-minded enough to knowing that, you know, you can be coached, you can learn more. There's, you know, there's so much to take from all, you know, from every area of life. And as I was saying to you before we started this, you know, this is why I do these interviews. Yeah. That, you know, people initially watching them may not see an immediate parallel of, you know, oh well, what's an ex-tennis player and Matt talking about sport, you know, got to do with my small business or my, you know, future entrepreneurial career. But I think, you know, if you can sit down and watch, you know, watch an interview or a speech or you know, enjoy a conversation with anyone who's an expert in their game, you know, whether it's sport, whether it's acting, comedy, business, you know, there's so many parallel areas of everything in life that if you can absorb one sentence or one paragraph that's relative to you and your situation, and you can put into context, then overnight, you know, you can really take yourself to the next level.
No, 100%. I mean, I think one thing that was worked really well for me moving from sport into business was the fight. You know, being able to break through that pain barrier of things not going well. And persisting and trying and keep trying and keep trying to get to where you're going, because, I mean, you know, there's a lot of energy in sport and business to succeed. and may not be physical in business, it's more mental, and where tennis is a little bit more physical on the work and everything. But if you fight hard and you continue and you trust yourself and you just, you know, believe that you can do it, you know, a lot of times people just give up too early, they give up too soon, and they want to walk away. But I think if you fight hard in anything that you do, you create yourself an opportunity to have success.
So what's next for Wayne Ferreira?
Well, I'm going to be travelling with Marin through Wimbledon and the US Open.
How long's your contract for?
It's supposed to be a trial period. We're going to go through the US Open in August, and we'll see where it goes from there. I'm very positive. I think I'll be able to help him a lot, and I'm hopefully that, you know, it'll go a lot further than that. I'm very fortunate, you know, to start with somebody who I really like. I think he's a great guy. Like I said, he's open-minded to learn, and he's been a lot of fun to be around. And you know, it's always nice to basically help somebody who wants to be helped.
Cool. Well, listen, I'll be at Wimbledon, so I'll be looking forward to seeing you there and seeing your results in action. Thanks a lot for joining us today, and it's been great to chat.
Thanks, mate. Appreciate it. Thanks, mate.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers, mate. Thanks.
Hi, this is Wayne Ferreira. I've just been hanging out with Matt Haycox, talking about sport, business, and just life in general. You got to go to YouTube, check it out.
Thank you for listening to the Matt Haycox Show. For more Matt, check out his YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/Matt Haycox. Or go stalk him on Instagram and Twitter, the Matt Haycox. And we'll see you soon.